take a moment and feel your body. Is there some tightness, some soreness somewhere? If so, take a moment, see if you can massage it or find out how to relax it, huh? Maybe the neck, the shoulders, the back. Knees. See if you can get clear. Is there some physical tension? Perhaps your cushion is too high or too low. Do you need to adjust your posture? Or perhaps is there some mental turmoil going on that then causes you to tense up, shoulders become tight? The body and the mind are connected. They are inseparable. When we go into our head and start worrying about things, our body changes. Pay attention to this and see what you can do to keep your body comfortably relaxed in meditation, and yet there is a certain tautness, a certain good tension, but it's not an uncomfortable one at all. You're quite relaxed, quite comfortable, and yet also very clear and focused. This has much to do with the physical posture that we take. Also, of course, the attitude of mind as well. As I mentioned yesterday, the first paragraph, which we already went through, is a kind of a general opening. It's also at the very end he repeats the same thing. He ends where he began. And then with the second paragraph he starts to go gradually more and more into the specifics, beginning with the body and then with the mind. Let me one more time read the opening paragraph of the Zazen manual, which we went over yesterday. Quote, Bodhisattvas aspiring to prajna wisdom should first arouse great compassion. Take the four great vows and cultivate samadhi concentration. Vowing to set all beings free, do not seek liberation for yourself alone. I trust this is becoming clear to you through your own practice. This is where we begin. It is the only place we can really begin. It is where we begin. To continue now with the second paragraph from the Zazen manual. Quote, then let go of all conditions and put all concerns to rest. With body and mind one, no separation between movement and stillness. Be moderate with food and drink, taking neither too much nor too little. Regulate sleep, neither depriving nor indulging. End quote. Having prepared ourselves the best we can by putting into practice the introductory paragraph, we are now asked to, quote, let go of all conditions and put all concerns to rest, end quote. This refers to both external conditions and internal concerns. All is naturally laid to rest in sustained zazen, not ignored, not repressed. This is difficult to realize if we fixate on an external world out there and an internal world in our heads. After all, these two are not entirely separate worlds, are they? Who makes that distinction in the first place? And from where? In concentrated zazen, all such divisions are naturally laid to rest. Likewise, if we sit here thinking that our body is here and our mind is in here, so we allow all our energy to be gathered into one, body and mind naturally concentrated into one, as the Zazen manual says. But how do we do this? Through the next several paragraphs, we will go through it in detail, but very briefly, first, the physical posture is to get settled. Practically speaking, first we settle the body, then it is easier to settle the mind. In this paragraph, it's really just a general overview of what is to come. The essentials are just very briefly given. It's still fairly general. It may sound abstract. But as practice deepens, you see from your own experience, it is not limited just to the time on the meditation cushion. It comes to be the way that we are, both in the stillness of sitting and in activity. Thus, a practice like kinhin, walking meditation, continuing the concentration of sitting, but now in a simple action, such as walking mindfully, following the foot of the person in front of us. Then, when we return to our sitting cushion after a break, we don't begin our practice again. We simply and naturally continue our constant practice now in the seated posture. This is quite a natural thing during retreat. It's one of the great virtues of doing a retreat where we have several days to do many, many hours of concentrated zazen. It's not just for the zazen. It is so that zazen can get up and walk and move and work in the world. Otherwise, what good is it? This section from the Zazen manual ends by reminding bodhisattvas, all of us, to get the nourishment and the sleep needed without indulging. A session retreat like this is carefully planned to do just that. Continue it in your daily life as well. If you're having a lot of discomfort in the sitting, if you're not yet settled in the practice, you may be tempted during the breaks, for example, to eat a lot of sweets or to eat too much during the meal. This is not good. It's not good to eat too much anyway, but to do it because you're having difficult time on the cushion is just creating a vicious circle. Your sitting isn't going well, so then you eat too much, then you get tired, you lay down, it's not very restful sleep because you've eaten so much, and you wake up and you try to do meditation, that doesn't go well. And then you wonder why you're having such a difficult time. You are feeding your own weaknesses, huh? You're feeding your own delusions, huh? If you're having a difficult time on the cushion, recognize it. Do what you can to adjust your posture. During the breaks, you can ask Marty, the Jiki, to make sure that your sitting is posture, that your sitting is proper. He can check your posture if you'd like, And then be mindful when you're eating. Get the nourishment that you need. Yes, this is not asceticism. Get the nourishment that you need, but you don't overeat. It's natural. In Japanese, there's an expression, hara hachibu, which means the hara, eight parts. In other words, 8 out of 10. You eat to 80% of fullness. I'm afraid Americans tend to eat to about 120%. Let me read that second paragraph again. Then let go of all conditions and put all concerns to rest, with body and mind one, and no separation between movement and stillness. Be moderate with food and drink, neither taking too much nor too little. Regulate sleep, neither depriving nor indulging. We're doing a retreat now, so you might say, oh, we're getting pretty close to depriving on a sleep there, aren't we? Especially if you're sitting through the night, Well, there's a chance for a couple of hours of sleep. There's also a chance, especially after lunch, to have a long rest if you need then. If you're tired, take advantage of it. The point is not to indulge in the sleep. And what happens if you're sitting properly, you'll find that you don't need as much sleep. The sitting itself, there may be some physical pain, but it's very deeply restful at the same time. If you remember in the middle of the Zazen manual, he goes on trying to charm you about how pleasant and pure and joyful the Zazen is. We'll get to that later. But he's right. It is. As I often say, good Zazen is much better than bad sleep. You can sleep, so-called, for 8 hours and wake up feeling worse than when you went to bed. Why? Well, that's because the sleep is full of the self-conflict, dreams, nightmares. It's not restful at all. We all know this. We've all slept like that. Huh? But proper zazen is thoroughly restful in body and in mind. As it says, it nourishes the spirit. It uses this kind of Taoist and Chinese terminology. Huh? But it's quite accurate. So we're not trying to cause damage to our body or mind, nor are we trying to torture ourselves. But we have all made great efforts to come here, great sacrifices. Others have sacrificed too, so that we can be here. Many of us from great distances, California, Washington State, Florida, Japan. So naturally, we want to make best use of this precious opportunity. And the schedule is there to help us do just that. In a way, it's forcing you to sit properly, because it's very difficult to do a whole retreat like this if you're not sitting properly. Huh? If you are, you're very tired at the end, but also very refreshed. If you're not sitting properly, well, you know the hell that it is, huh? So, in a way, it forces you to sit properly. And what happens when you do, you realize how you have been basically fighting yourself. That's what's tiring. That's the real pain. Pushing against the wall of yourself. When you realize that, the practice takes a turn. Let us now look at the third paragraph. He's starting to get more specific now, huh? Quote, "For zazen, spread a thick mat in a quiet place, loosen your clothing, but maintain proper bearing, and sit in full lotus. First, place right foot on left thigh, then left foot on right thigh, or sit in half lotus, placing left foot on right thigh." End quote. Zazen is not asceticism. It says, use a thick mat. Yes, use a mat thick enough but firm enough to support your body comfortably. Especially in the beginning, a quiet place, as it suggests, is conducive, is helpful. In the end, of course, it doesn't matter how noisy it is. But especially as we are getting settled in the practice, having a place like this is helpful. And having a Tina there who might, when necessary, close the door is also very helpful. But it really is not a disturbance. Huh? If there is noise or if you meet people that are a part of the staff here, not here for the retreat, feel free to smile or say hello. They are under no obligation to maintain the silence that we keep. Huh? Of course, when all is said and done, no amount of noise can disturb this. If it can, well, you're not doing zazen. Huh? But practically speaking, it's helpful in the beginning to have a place like we have here. It also talks about the looseness of the clothing. It describes it in terms of the koromo, the robe of the monk being loosened. But for us, we might say, you know, see that your belt is loose. You're not wearing pants that are too tight. Not restricted, huh? So make sure For example, if you wear a belt to loosen it when you're sitting, huh? You don't want the body to be tight or constrained. But at the same time, you don't slouch. In other words, the clothing should be comfortable, but you shouldn't be, you know, just slouching over. The body should maintain the correct posture, but in a comfortable way. Full lotus is recommended. Why? Because it works. The hips are open. It's easy to remain with the back naturally erect for long periods. And it's very helpful to breathe from the belly. If you can do it comfortably or gradually get used to it through stretching and so forth, by all means do so. It is the best posture for sustained meditation. If you can't do it, no problem. As mentioned, half lotus is also fine. Don't worry about which leg goes on the top. They talk about doing it this way, and then after you get enlightened, you reverse it. I'm serious. It has to do with the passive and the active. As a matter of fact, in Theravada Buddhism, they reverse it also because they're focusing on the meditation. Mahayana Buddhism is focusing on the dynamic of working in the world. So actually, in Theravada Buddhism, we sit like this. They sit like that. Oh, no. Well, I wouldn't worry too much about it. And with the legs, I'm no scientist, but I've read several studies that suggest it's a good idea if you sit, for example, half lotus, if you can, to sometimes reverse the leg. In other words, if you usually sit with your one leg up, at least sometimes, if you can, sit with your other leg up, because otherwise you're always only using one side, the muscles on one side, and this is not good. So as much as possible, if you can, in sitting half lotus, sometimes try to reverse the leg. Also, with full lotus, sometimes I'll reverse the legs too, to try to keep a balance on what is being done with the nerves and the muscles. If neither full lotus nor half lotus works, there are many other postures, including the Burmese. Anthony is sitting in Burmese, with the legs flat on the ground there. Seiza, in the Japanese tea ceremony, they sit like that. Is anybody sitting in Seiza? Oh yeah, you are. Huh? Yeah, and also behind you, Tatsuda-san, good Japanese. With the legs kind of, your legs on your haunches, huh? Right? Tom and Tatsuda-san here are sitting in it. Huh? Often they'll use a bench, a seiza bench. There's one, yeah, right here. Huh? Oh yeah, you're doing it too, huh? Yeah, thanks. with a seiza bench, or else just put some cushions up to lift your butt up. You can also put them in between your legs. Huh? A chair will also do, but don't lean against the back of it, huh? Again, whatever posture you take, the essential point is for your back to be naturally erect, huh? Following the natural curvature of the spine, huh? The butt sticking out a little bit and then coming up like this, huh? The way an infant, six-month-old infant sits. Huh? That way, you remain focused and alert for sustained meditation. Nobody can tell you which is the right posture for you. You have to find out by doing it. So try various postures. Try various thickness of cushions under your butt to see what works for you. I believe the longest period of Zazen we have is 40 minutes, so no matter how uncomfortable it is, you're not going to die if you sit still for 40 minutes, but you will know at the end of that 40 minutes, that was it, or nope, I won't do that again. But the only way to find out is to do it. Take care, listen to your body, and then find out what works. Please feel free to stand up and stretch for a moment if you'd like. Quote, next, place right hand on left foot, left hand on right palm, thumbs touching. Raise torso and stretch it forward. Rock side to side, then sit erect. Do not tilt to one side, forward or backward. Align hips, spine, and head like a stupa. But do not strain to make your body erect, as this will constrict breath and cause discomfort. ears in line with shoulders, nose in line with navel, tongue resting on upper palate, mouth gently closed, eye slightly open to prevent drowsiness, end quote. Placing the hands on the feet, like he says, applies to sitting in full lotus. However you sit, place the hands below the navel, the thumbs lightly touching at the navel. Westerners have a tendency to have their thumbs out front. The thumbs should be touching or almost touching the navel, like that. It depends, of course, on what where your feet are. Some people put a small cushion here to get the proper height. But again, the thumb should be about where the belly button, the navel is, like that. This is the formal mudra, the formal hand posture. The less formal posture is just taking the right hand and then using the left hand, wrapping it around the thumb of the right hand and gently let it rest here. So if you notice the monks in Japan, they'll sit like this while they're waiting. And then once the clapper and the formal sitting period begins, they go like this. But otherwise, they're sitting like this. This is often the preferred practice for lay centers like this. Again, find out what works for you, although the kosher mudra is this. There's good reason for it, Of course, people describe it in terms of the working of the ki energy and so on, but the chi, or the Japanese ki energy. But also, if you're breathing properly, you're using the muscles down here, so you can actually feel it. You can actually feel it, especially at the end of the out-breath. You can feel it kind of extending, not going in, but actually extending. To get out of your head and into your body, the center of your body. It's very helpful to have the hands there. It's also helpful to settle the breath in the belly, and it also helps to have the hands like this to steady the upper body so you don't stretch forward, your shoulders get tight, It also mentions raising the torso, raising the upper body so you're not like maybe at your computer. So what I find very helpful is to stretch forward until the forehead touches the floor and then slowly come up, feeling your butt pressing down and a little back on the cushion, spine naturally erect. It also mentions to gently rock side by side, and then you can naturally find the center so you're not leaning. Especially if you're sitting in half lotus, there's a natural tendency to lean to one side a bit. So if you rock a little bit, you can find the center, also going forward and backwards, so that you're not leaning one way or the other. Feel your back, your neck, and your head naturally supporting each other. It also mentions about avoiding strain or force, not forcing it, not making it too tense. The guidelines given in this manual are the result of long centuries of trial and error. Try them and you'll see. For example, it says resting the tongue on the upper palate with the mouth gently closed. It's exactly what happens when you sit properly. It doesn't matter, but if you want an explanation, if you put your tongue up and slightly touch the roof of your mouth, you don't have to swallow as much. And you don't find yourself playing around with your tongue, checking around to make sure you brushed your teeth properly. Huh? It's just the way that your tongue would naturally, you don't need to do anything with it. So you put it in a position that actually helps what you're doing. It's the same thing with full lotus. It's not torture. It's putting your legs in a way that is most supportive for what we are doing, sustained, concentrated meditation. Eyes slightly open, that's a humdinger though. That's a problem for a lot of people. And actually the next whole paragraph is devoted to that. So obviously a good 1,000 years ago they had the same problem. The next paragraph is talking about that. Huh? Quote, this, eyes slightly open, this is best for sustaining the concentrated power of dhyana. In former times, eminent monks adept in this practice always sat with eyes open. Zen master Fa Yun, probably the author's teacher, but we're not completely sure. Zen master Fa Yun scolded those sitting with eyes closed, like a ghost cave in a dark mountain. There is good reason for this, which adepts know well. End quote. Here, the samadhi concentration of the first paragraph has deepened, has settled into the concentrated power of dhyana. He'll use that term several times now. And eyes slightly open is the way in Zen Buddhism. The problem is in our daily lives, we're not used to it. We either have our eyes open and we're looking at something, or they're closed and we're not. This slightly open stuff, it's just not natural, so it doesn't come easily to many people. And yet, that is exactly what is called for here. Opening them all the way, you already can tell, right? We then tend to look around and discursive consciousness is activated, so it's not a good idea. Closing them all the way, though, we then tend to drift into a world of imagination, dreams, and so on, or we get drowsy, as the manual explicitly states. Try it for a while and see. Sitting properly, eyes naturally remain slightly open, looking downward but not fixated on anything. You're not looking for anything. You're not looking at anything. Otherwise, dragons are going to start appearing on the pattern on the floor, right? But it's very significant. You don't close your eyes either. You don't need to close your eyes to close out the visual field. No, we have eyes, let them function. But we're not looking for or at anything, so they would just naturally do that. Try it for a while and see. Sitting properly, eyes naturally remain slightly open and looking downward like that. If after sustained sitting, you are still not comfortable with the eyes slightly open, then close them, as long as the focus remains clear. Other Buddhist traditions sit with the eyes closed, so don't worry about it. Just a few months ago, I was in LA and Tana-san. You remember Tana-san, the Thai monk from Tofukuji? You weren't there at that time, huh? He's a Thai monk who spent a year at Tofukuji training. Very fine man. He's now in Southern California, and he flew up to San Francisco. We spent the day together. And he's a Thai monk, so we also sat meditation 3 times in my hotel room. But I asked him just to make sure. You close your eyes, right? Yes, we close our eyes. Huh? And you put your hands like that, yeah. So I wouldn't worry about it too much. But there is a very good reason that we don't close the eyes in Zen meditation. Again, confirm it for yourself. not only does it keep you from drifting off or from sinking into dead blankness, what he called like a ghost cave in a dark mountain, it is also easier to then continue that concentration in daily activities without gap or interruption. You see? You're not going into some special world. With the next paragraph, he will start to dig into what we do with the mind. So far, he has been going through the general physical posture, what to do with the legs, what to do with the hands, with the eyes. Does anyone have any questions or concerns about what we've gone through today? Or any problems that you're having, perhaps? Someone here may be able to help. Yeah.
So many problems. The hands, thumbs, are evil like this? Or
no. You see what your shoulders are doing?
Yes.
That's going to hurt. So gently, relaxed. If you're sitting like this, you see you have something for them to rest on. There, you don't. So that's why it's helpful to have it slightly touching against your belly. Do you know what I mean? But watch the shoulders. If you do that, it's going to hurt after a while. Huh? So they should be relaxed. They talk about the shoulders in line with the ears, not like that. Huh?
But the thumbs go up? Or?
Yeah, not up, just like that. Huh? They call it a half moon. It looks like a half moon, huh? Like that. Huh? You know, some people, what they do is they take their shirt and they go like this, so they have something to put their hands in if they're not sitting full lotus. Yeah, but that looks fine like that. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions or concerns? Don't worry too much about the legs. As long as the back is naturally erect, that's the essential point. Huh? Yeah, Steve.
So, given that this mirrors Dogen's instructions, I guess I'm wondering, what's the difference between the Soto and the Rinzai sect?
Well, at this point, nothing. At this point, there was no clear distinction between the two of them. This was at least 100 years before Dogen wrote his stuff. But if you look at, actually someone wrote a whole book about this. It's called Dogen's Manuals of Zazen Meditation, I think, or Zen Meditation. It's a scholar, but also a practitioner. And he shows in detail every word in, for example, two of Dogen's Zazen manuals. One is a very famous Fukan Zazengi, the universal promotion of Zazen. Gi, it's the same word. About 70% of it is taken word for word from this. You know, we would call it plagiarism, but there they call it must be authentic. But he does make changes. He does make changes. He does add things. But at this point, it's not relevant. This is so basic, it has nothing to do with Rinzai or Soto. As a matter of fact, as I mentioned, this is in the handbook that of every Rinzai monk who's practicing in this little two-volume Japanese published thing that you can fit in your pocket, your kimono pocket, huh? So when you're practicing. Huh? Poison painted drum, it's called. Huh? This is in there. Soto Zen uses it too, but they tend to use the revisions with the revisions by Dogen, because at least in Japan, he's the founder, so-called, of Soto Zen. But it's basically, he's saying the same thing, but he gets a little more metaphysical and he adds some more things. Okay? Yeah, the physical stuff is basically the same. A lot of this, almost the whole paragraph, Dogen just stole it, word for word. Okay?
So the difference comes when the way you dispose your mind?
Yeah, he uses some, you know, rather metaphysical, but also very interesting metaphors and things like that you don't find in here. This is not an exciting text. Dogen's is more interesting. This is very dry. There's no humor in it. you know, the Zen Mondos, all that kind of stuff. This is very dry. But this is the essentials, the
but
real essentials.
Instead of them, they basically say, when a thought arises, notice it, and then let it go.
He says the exact same thing.
Right.
They got it from here.
If we're disposing our bodies the same, and mentally we're just being aware of thoughts without chasing them,
mm-hmm.
What's the difference between, I mean, so then the difference involves teachings or something?
Yeah.
When you get on the cushion,
the difference would be after that. After that, what do you do? In Soto Zen, in a sense, they're saying, this is it. This is it. Just do this. And they're right. In Rinzai Zen, they say, well, okay, but if you need a little help, Joshu said, now become that. Put that there. Put that there. But it's not really another thing. In the beginning, it seems that way. But they're just helping you to fine-tune the practice. They're giving you something that you can't get away from to keep you locked in, to keep you anchored in. But again, that comes afterwards. You know what I mean? This is kind of like the primer, the manual. Once you've got this down, you want to do Soto Zen? Go ahead. You want to do Rinzai Zen? If you want to make a difference. And frankly, it's just a, how did you put it, approach. It's kind of a difference of approach. And really, if you meet enough teachers, you'll see there are very Rinzai-like Soto teachers and very Soto-like Rinzai teachers. It's very, really a not very helpful distinction. Boshan, you know, that guy that's always talking about rousing the great doubt. Well, he was a Soto monk. Sorry. Right? This guy, he's using all this, what Americans think of as Rinzai Zenistic terminology. He was one of the greatest Soto monks of Ming China. You know, I wouldn't even worry about these distinctions that often come about from a very small view of what Soto Zen or Rinzai Zen. It doesn't matter. This is before that. Okay? It's not very interesting, though. There's almost no humor, a little bit, but there's almost no humor in it. But it's really helpful, I think, to come back. Probably most of it is already familiar to you, Steve. Huh? But still, to go through it again and to see and just touch base and see. Sometimes a little fine-tuning can be very helpful. Okay? Yeah, Steve.
Yes. How does standing meditation work?
Not very well. And you see why if you stand for a while. You can do it. You can do it. I knew a Japanese who died about 10 years ago, Kitahara Hakushu. His grandfather was one of the greatest poets and children's songwriters of the modern age. Very extraordinary guy. He was a Japanese soldier in the Second World War in fighting in China, and he had to often stand guard with his rifle. And he told me about how he learned to do a kind of zazen, but he said he wouldn't recommend it. There's a reason that you don't lie down, but you don't stand up. They have expressions about practicing so that whether you are standing, walking, which basically means inaction, sitting or lying down, the four possible postures for the human being. Huh? Whether you are standing, walking, am I doing this right? Standing, walking, sitting, or lying down. The subject is at rest. They have expressions like this. But for the actual practice of sustained meditation, sitting is by far the best posture. The dangers of lying down are obvious, right? Your body's used to sleeping when it does that. Standing up can work. In a way, you have to be able to maintain it when you're walking, when you're working, when you're driving, whatever you're doing. But as a discipline, sitting on the cushion in sustained meditation is do it and you'll find out. By far the best way. But in a way, I'm really glad you raised the question, because there's always the danger of getting stuck in that. It can work so well that then people just want to stay there. So in Zen, they're very clear about this. The sitting has to stand, or else it's not true sitting. Do you know what I mean?
The reason I brought it up,
yeah.
I saw it described before, and I've tried it a number of times, but my circumstances now are limiting the duration where I can sit with attention. Mm. So, as you know, when I stand, I find that keeping the continuity, as you were saying, and into the stand is workable for me.
Good.
But then chin in is not, because I have a difficult time walking in the rhythm of the person in front of me.
Yeah. If we go too fast, for example, you can just continue in here at your own pace. If it's not, if we go too fast, for example, walking during kinin, is that part of the problem?
Yes, there is that. But it's my peculiar hobble. Hobble.
Well,
is hardly imitatable by anybody.
Never thought of that. I guess you have to watch what happens to the guy behind you. By the time it gets to the end of the line, they're crawling, maybe. Well, you could either go to the end of the line if you prefer doing that, or you could just stay in here when we're out in the hallway and go at your own pace. So don't worry about that. But to take that practice of sitting, especially if you need to, you can't do it anymore, then stand. I've seen... if you want, I'll give you the address of a friend of mine. He's an American who's lived in London for a real long time. And he does, you'll see him during the breaks in the retreats in the UK. He's maybe 80 years old, an old guy, but he's really limber. And he does those things where he just goes, and he just, like 45 minutes, he just goes like this, like that. You know, people are walking up. he's doing a kind of meditation, and he has different things he's worked out. He's done it for a long time, so if you want, I'll get you in touch with him. I think he's quite a bit older than you, but he's found ways of doing it. Tree, I think he uses the metaphor of like a tree. You know, your rooted branches.
So this is Tai Chi?
No, he worked it out himself. It's not anything.
Yeah, I would very definitely love.
Yeah, he may have been influenced by Tai Chi, but over the years he's figured out a way. So maybe it's helpful. Does anyone else have any suggestions? Yeah. Unfortunately, I can sit in full lotus, so I'm not allowed to help here.
Well, I had a great experience of a standing meditation in the center of a river, and I was standing on a rock, and I think the essential thing is how do you keep your body upright and breathing smooth, and then focusing on certain things if you want to. And then at that moment, I remember a lot of people came over talking on the side. So I just let that go. Usually I would say hello. But then at that point, I said, no. Just let it be, whatever let it be, and then that's it. So I stood for 30 minutes, and everything just, great experience.
I think by the end of the retreat, we'll all be standing. Does anyone have any other suggestions about that? Yeah.
In yoga, there is a very basic posture, Tadasana. It's a standing, you are a yoga teacher, you know better. It's a very basic sitting posture.
Sitting?
Standing posture, Tadasana. And it looks very simple, but it has a lot of details on it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the best way to. I don't know how to do it.
It's like you just stand, hip width apart. This is the simplest. And arms next.
Mountain.
The Dasana. Yeah,
Dadasana.
Right now, yeah.
Yeah.
It's English. The Dasana sounds good. You can also raise your arms, but I don't think in the sendo it's appropriate. But at home, this would be a variation. The Dasana.
Thank you.
There's much in Tai Chi and Qigong on standing, sometimes with visualization, sometimes what they call just standing.
Can you show that?
No.
No? Okay.
I don't.
I can do the Qigong.
Can you, you might help to show him.
The guy who says the basic things.
Bend your knees a
little. Right, hand your knees a little bit, put your butt out like you're on the end of a stool. And just stand there like this for 30 years.
This is the kind of various postures that I've seen, but I can't do them. But and some people use the visualization of the energy, focusing the ki. But there's a lot of people who don't do that. They call it just standing.
Anything else? We've run out of time. So. Thank you all for your input, questions, and comments, and for listening so intently. Tomorrow we'll continue with more of the mind stuff. But again, if you have any problems with the body, please bring them up, okay? Thank you again.